everyone, welcome back to another episode of Ad Aster. And today we have the pleasure of talking with Sean Giroux. My name is Caroline and I'm here with Emma today. And to start, we'll just give our little intro for Sean. Sean Giroux's poetry and translations have appeared in the Hopkins Review, Boston Review, Tin House, The Offing, Defunct, New Session, Typo, Denver Quarterly, and elsewhere. He teaches English and creative writing at the Community College of Philadelphia and Widener University. He lives gaily in West Philly with his husband and two cats. Yeah, thank you so much for being here, Sean. We are all huge fans of you. And yeah, if we want to go ahead with just some questions from Emma, I'll leave it to you.
Yeah, so we heard that you're translating a book by Theodore Doppler from German. So how did you find your way into this project? And can you briefly kind of describe your journey with it?
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me. It's such a pleasure to be here as a BTL family member, one of the, I don't know, extended cousins or something. It feels really nice to be at home here. The way that this project began, I like to say that the universe took serendipity on me because I found this book, The Star Child, in German, Das Sternenkind, that hadn't been translated. I found it in a garbage can. You know, people get rid of stuff as they're leaving a place, and I was moving into an apartment, found this book, and was sort of intrigued. I had been working with Between the Lines as a summer camp counselor for a number of years at that point, maybe three or four, and I was really inspired by the students who were investigating these borderlands, these linguistic borderlands, cultural borderlands, and how translation was part of that process. And I sort of was like, well, it would be great if I had a text that was sort of like a companion in this way, had a friendship with a text on this very deep level. And so when I found this book, I thought, well, maybe this could be something that I could translate, even though I don't know this language at all. And a couple of things stood out to me when I opened the book. I recognized it as German. I didn't have any real experience with German at that point, but a lot of English is German or Germanic in origin. And I noticed the word Nachtigallen, and I noticed the word Schlagen in the first poem, A Million Nightingales Flapping Their Wings or Flying. And that image drew me in because it sort of spoke to my cultural background. I use the phrase, I'm supposed to be German, I'm supposed to be Jewish, I'm supposed to be a lot of things, but my relationship to like a direct heritage was interrupted when I was a child, because when I was 12, I went to foster care and lived with many different families, kinds of families. Went to Catholic school for maybe about 4 years or so, 4 or 5 years. And finding this text really was a magical moment, because I don't think how a lot of projects get started is I was moving into a place and this book reached out to me in some sense, said, don't throw me away.
Yeah, wow, that is so inspiring. We love random coincidental moments, and that's so beautiful. So now, while you're actually translating it, how do you kind of approach actually physically translating the text, and how have you learned to find your own style of translation while translating it?
Wow, yeah, well, I guess my first approach, and for years my approach was trying to understand what the text is presenting to me. That is, what gets hidden, or what trap doors in terms of puns or linguistic things that I wouldn't necessarily pick up on are present. And so that remains a source of like, can I trust how I'm putting the poet's intention together. And then once I feel that I've got a sense of that by going through the motions, almost like baby talk and babbling and giving myself lots of different options to choose from, then I'll go in and find a center for myself in each line, or I guess find a way to balance what I feel like is someone else's intention with what I want to say again and again. But so things are like on a rolling disclosure for me. And so I'm constantly going back, and I think of it as like hugging old poems or old drafts, or, you know, refreshing them and adding like, oh, I know. Okay. Now that I know that Theodore Dobler has this specific play with the way that he regenders nouns based on his cosmology. So he sees the moon in his poems. There's this whole mythological, cosmological backdrop that he spins. But the moon is female to him. But in German, the moon is a masculine noun, or all, I think maybe all nouns, or most nouns are masculine. But in Italian, which is another one of his native languages, it's feminine. And so he sort of picks and chooses which, you know, family of languages, or which what his relationship, I guess, is with language, and where he has multiple frames of belonging is sort of the sense I get. And so I, again, serendipity, this is the relationship I really desire in a text. So it turns out his poetics really match my wanting to up the ante in some of the language in terms of, you know, queer identity, maybe national identity as well is a big one for him. I relieve a lot of the pressure for myself, I should say, because even though I'm the only person who I know of who's translating this particular poet and poems into this language right now, I really just see myself as a first, very particular perspective and interpretation, and that my oddities or quirks or that perspective is valuable to me and maybe some readers. And I find comfort in the notion that everyone, you know, anyone could contribute there. Like, I would, ideally, this would be a great fruition of this project, is just for other people to want to translate this poet or feel the need to, and for the conversation to grow from there.
So our next kind of questions, you've kind of answered them already, but do you feel any connection to the author now that you've translated and dissected his words? And how has the process of translating him and translating from German kind of aided your own journey of self-discovery?
Well, the second part of aiding my own sense of self-discovery, what I was talking about with early disillusionment with inherited forms of identity, or maybe my disease with that, this project really lets me nuance that, because I should say my biological father and grandfather, their last name was Nightingale. So the first poem was, I didn't mention that, but that was a big part of me thinking, oh, this name that I've heard of, that, you know, my last name, Giroux, it's a long story why I don't have my father's last name, but it sort of fits with, teams with the theme maybe of, a name isn't necessarily patrilinear in all ways the same ways. But the sense that I could reclaim something that was lost in a diasporic sense on my own terms, part of the reason why I don't really have a great relationship or a continued relationship with my biological ancestors is because of my queer identity, and how that created barriers at a young age. So it's pretty fun to engage with it in literature, where I already seek out companionship, seek out home, connection.
Do you feel any connection to the author now that you've translated and dissected his words?
I certainly do. I was worried at first because this author, just knowing the time period and the language, you wonder, okay, what environment did this author come from? 1916, Germany in the middle of World War One. I didn't know for certain that he had a homosexual disposition, I think is what the text said when I actually found it in a text, that there's textual evidence. But part of the reason why I felt the momentum to continue with the project is because I was like, this is gay to me. This is queer. This is speaking across 100 years to who I am now. And actually, while I am trying to find a space for myself in this translation, it's nice that I don't have to invent one. I can sort of emphasize how a space is, how I feel a space already there. I'm also interested in translations that are making that space, depending on the degree of how coded the language may be. So there are a couple people writing about this poet, which is exciting. Last year, a book called Modernism in Trieste. I think the writer's name is Salvatore Pappalardo. So he writes about Dobler's Poetics of Bilingualism. And part of this has to do with his notion of, he didn't really see himself in terms of a national origin. He lived in Trieste or grew up there, which is part of Italy in the present day, but at the time was in the Austro-Hungarian Empire. And so there was this, that's why he grew up Italian and German bilingual. When it came time to choose where he would be a citizen after the First World War, he chose to be an Italian citizen, but a German author, only writing in German. So all his literature's in German. And he's part of a handful of writers that this author describes as imagining a Mediterranean identity that isn't just Italian or Middle Eastern or whatever, but that is syncretic or, you know, sort of synthesized all into one. He thought, well, if you go back far enough, all peoples were probably part of the same culture. And he figured the Phoenicians, which were seafaring Semitic tribes that had advanced technology. He said, well, these people probably influenced the Greeks heavily. And so European culture is more rooted in Semitic culture at a time where even, I guess, to the present day, there's a lot of discrimination against Semitic cultures. And so a lot of what I admire about identifying with this poet, or how I get to identify with this poet, is this transnational sense of identity and connectivity. That's it.
Yeah, that is such, so many beautiful, beautiful words and sentiments. And yeah, I'm definitely, even as someone who is not cool enough to be translating works, just the way that I've been able to feel validated in my identity by reading literature by people from hundreds or thousands of years ago. And that is such a powerful testament to literature and the way it connects us and really allows us to build solidarity, even if we're not finding that solidarity in real life and the people around us. That is incredible. And I love how you're basically expanding that solidarity, that access to that connection by translating these works and making them more accessible to more people across the world. And that's really incredible. And kind of on that note, we would love to talk a little more broadly about translation as a whole and your journey with it. We might have like an inkling of what your answer would be, but we are curious what your favorite work that you've translated so far is and why.
Oh, that's hard. Um, they're all experiences. And so part of the joy comes in like learning my own language, or I should say the English language in greater detail. I'm working on something called Song of the Zodiac, which is a longer poem than I've ever translated, of like 5 or 6 pages. The other favorite that I have is somewhat recently a poem called Fremd. And actually the original German language title, F-R-E-M-D, when I looked it up, it was an English word already. But it's in English and in German, it means foreign or strange. And so that was another serendipitous moment where, you know, I don't think most people, that's more esoteric word, but when you look it up, you sort of experience the meaning by going through that motion. And so I thought, oh, well, how simple and lovely is that, that that's just the first step in this process. A lot of the work, like I said, it has to do with learning, especially because I'm starting from square zero. And so the joy is in the struggle. But that poem, ironically, the translation, somewhat easy or fluid, because even the first word, it's sort of like it could translate itself in a sense, or it could transcend itself. I don't know.
That's amazing. That's so cool. And for me too, having studied different languages before, more just like to learn about the culture and communicate verbally as opposed to like literarily, though, I feel like interacting so intimately with these texts and these different languages can really shape how you, as you mentioned, understand English and how you see English and really just literature and the world as a whole. And I'm kind of curious about your perspective on that and just how your translation and linguistic work have shaped how you see English, the world, yourself, or just, yeah, anything.
Well, certainly, I think whenever you start doing something, especially maybe in writing, where we have eyes towards structure as well as towards like what's meaningful, significant, what changes or guides our life force. We're writers, and I actually just sort of want to, it made me think of something you said earlier that I wanted to respond to too, which is you're a translator. You are. I think we're all pretty familiar with code switching and how that is, it takes a lot of energy, it takes processing. A lot of that is on the linguistic level. And so when I began translating more in earnest, or in first in the closet and then in earnest, I got the sense, oh, I've been translating before. I've been peacekeeping before, or in a sense that if I'm peacekeeping, you can still find your center, but sometimes it means giving yourself up to maintain a sense of structure or order if you're a very serious facilitator in that role. I'm not really self-taught, because I've reached out to a lot of people for help, and so I don't want to give, but largely it is just, you know, me putting what feels like one Lego in front of another until I get the, you know, hair dryer out and start warping the pieces and seeing how they fit together. And I guess not everything is translating. I think maybe we would feel more comfortable with it if, like, as claiming translation or translator status. But I think there is something that tells us we can't be a translator. And certainly I picked like the least amount of stakes in poetry and literature, or at least the most amount of stakes that I can handle, with the least amount of stakes translating legal documents and stuff like that.
Yeah, no, I get what you mean, because I feel like just reading or kind of being in the world, a lot of the way we kind of create our identity is just interpretation. It's interpreting what's in front of us, interpreting what we read, interpreting the meaning behind our conversations. And that's kind of the same like logical thought process as translating. You're kind of just taking something else and you're thinking about how to create a worldview from it and kind of also adding the your own perspectives into creating that kind of final product, just similar to how we form our identities and our thoughts and the way we view the world. Do you think that's aligned with how you see translation? Or
absolutely, yeah, absolutely, because it's what it says about me and how I see the world ultimately. Like, I'm not shy about covering that up, and ultimately that is the part that frees me to come up with creative problem solving when I have a challenge, when I'm trying to fit too many words in my mouth at once and it's just not balanced or something.
Yeah, that's so cool. I feel like that's just like a paradigm shift of how I think about translation, honestly. Realizing
exactly, this whole conversation has been so paradigm shifting.
So mind-blowing, but that's really powerful, honestly. Thinking about how I code switch, thinking about how I like speak Chinese and English at home, and the way, all the little ways we translate our identity and how we speak and how we present ourselves in our daily lives. That is so cool. And I think that does, like you mentioned, like kind of imagining translation as this more expansive definition of translation, it almost makes it seem more accessible to us as something that we can do too, even if we're not like super like genius linguistic professors. Like, it really is something all of us do in some way. And that's such a beautiful sentiment.
It so is. And if I can add, like, we wouldn't think of food this way. We wouldn't think of, well, how could I eat? So many people have eaten so many beautiful, wonderful things. Other people, the way that they chew is just so nuanced. And, you know, but so why would we use that as a way to deprive ourselves of nutrition? Part of what Dobler's Poetics of Bilingualism, what Pappalardo describes is that, well, we need multiple frames of reference for belonging. That is just part of what's natural to a human diet. And in that particular time, a lot of Dobler's writings and other authors, of course, are warning against nationalism that says, no, it's this one particular identity that is more important and that has loyalty above all others, when we know monocultures are built to fail. Anyway.
Yeah, that is so cool. You are so cool. Oh my gosh.
You're so cool. Oh, this is so much fun.
Yeah. And you mentioned a couple times, sometimes, I guess, like seeing yourself in the work you translate, or sometimes almost like there's things that are so beautiful. You want to repeat them. You want to almost, I guess, if I were imagining myself as a translator, sometimes I feel like I might want to like almost edit or alter the work. And I guess, how do you balance respecting the original creator's work and your own artistic or translation style?
I balance that, I suppose. Well, first, maybe not first, but maybe one of the last tests is, how does it sound reading this? And do I feel good repeating this? And if not, why? Part of my process in translating as a non-native speaker has to do with overcoming that bewilderment, that fremd story of, you know, climbing the mountain, looking around, what's the topography, getting a sense of what the scope is. And so when I translate my reading experience, I'm also trying to give the English reader the sense of going through something different that asks them for another kind of attention or more attention or something. I need to ask the reader for something, that's for sure. In terms of balancing one of the author's original intentions, is the a lot of the poems have very clear rhyme, and which can be harder or maybe not the most productive thing to chase always. And so part of that balance, getting further and closer away, is, well, do I repeat the rhymes and go for maybe words that are less exact or different kinds of exact. So that's where a lot of the fun and creativity comes in, to where when I come across some of his poems that don't have any rhyme scheme, or where the rhyme scheme is anomalous or irregular for this poet, it becomes harder because I'm like, oh, I really need this rhyme scheme to help propel my brainstorming process. I feel like I don't change a lot of what I interpret and what I see in a poem, and that a lot of how I'm trying to balance that comes with like how well I can get out of my own flights of linguistic fancy. Then I get another flight of fancy or something. And this is the question. I mean, it's like for every poem, it's like starting again. What is the balance this time, and where and why? A poem like Frim that I talked about, that's where like pretty much a lot of the words were had obvious and productive English equivalents that made it feel like, oh, I'm just following the footsteps here, but I don't need to do as much to bring it into something that's meaningful for me in 2023.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And it's interesting how you keep on referring to things that you've been talking about before. I keep on thinking about how you keep on mentioning experiencing the poem, like how every poem is a different experience for you. And that's why each poem is so significant for you. But also our entire conversation has really been centered around the idea of identity and kind of cross referencing identities and bringing these identities together for our personal worldviews. So do you feel like when you're translating a poem, is experiencing the same poem like kind of similar to conveying an identity? And if not, what are the similarities and differences? And do you feel like you do it mainly for yourself or for Theodore or for the general like people that you want to convey the poem to? Where is it directed for? Where is it coming from?
In experiencing the poem, the 100-year-old poem that is itself concerned, well, a lot of his work is concerned with this primary origin where everything was whole in terms of peoples and culture was more whole or peaceful or unified or healthy. I believe Dobler's parents were divorced. And so I think part of his poetic vision is directed towards the future. He flirted with futurism at the time in Italy, which he recognized as fascist and ultimately disowned because of its nationalism. He ran in the same circles, I should say. But I think he is thinking about a future where this reunion comes back together. So I mentioned this cosmological backdrop, and everything that you were just saying in terms of this intertextual or maybe multifarious or many faceted aspect of belonging to one another. Not that it erases our identity in a singularity, but that. So this may get a little mystic because Dobler described himself as mystic, but maybe or maybe not believing. So that he really just liked what these images do in our mind, I think, what sort of things they reveal about us. And ultimately, that's my answer to this question, is that in making ourselves, I don't know if we're making ourselves vulnerable when we write poetry, but we're certainly revealing ourselves in a sense, even if we choose to go against that expectation, revealing that we're a prankster or something. And in Dobler's conception of the universe, he liked to find these moments of overlap or synchronicity in or across cultures. So stories where the constellation of the bull, like in the Vedas or in Greek mythology, appears. And so he'll put in all these different intertextual references to many different cultures. So in the cosmology, there's the sun, and the sun is the energy. It's male, and it imbues the earth, I think, is female, and the moon is sort of neutral, but also feminine. The aurora borealis, or the northern lights, is an image that he spent like the first 10 years of his life writing this epic called The Auroras, or Das Nordlicht. And it's the northern lights he thought of as the light that gets trapped in the earth. So from the sun, earthborn light that is ultimately on a pilgrimage back to the sun to be reunified. And so I think this conveyance of identity versus experience, I think this is something that Dobler tries to dramatize in a lot of different ways. And it's sort of a dizzying life's work, which is sort of why it's hard for me to think of an answer that is beyond, I reveal myself, and that's how I know myself. And I know myself in revealing myself to the other and in empathizing with the other.
No, that was so interesting. And I guess to add on to that, what about you yourself? When you're interpreting his works, is it, you talk about how you experience the poem and how it's also a way for you to connect to your roots. So do you feel kind of similar to him in that point of view, where while you're interpreting his work, not only are you experiencing his poem, but using the experience as a way to reveal something about yourself too through your translation?
Thank you. Yes, absolutely. I suppose, no, you said it perfectly. I can't add on to that. That initial sort of like being inspired by BTL students comes with this feeling of like, oh, I missed out on something, or I didn't do something right. I didn't learn a full language. I did study actually Italian in undergrad, which helps with Dobler, another point of serendipity. But I never really found an Italian author or felt more of a, I just took Italian because someone recommended it, that it doesn't meet on Fridays. And I had a great teacher, and I did translate some Italian poetry in those classes, but I wasn't thinking about translation as a way for my own process to become a sort of whole in a way, or to bring me to lifelong learning commitment that I want, which is what a language is, sort of.
Yeah, that is a journey. Wow. I think just like how you're talking about how you kind of came into the realization that translation is such a broad concept, I think that's really interesting to follow. We have to take languages in high school too. And for many people, it's just, oh, it's another requirement. But it's so interesting to see how even in different languages, there are different ways of expressing verbs and nouns. And there's different ways of looking at time, like verb conjugation and tenses. And really, the more ways you see languages and different perspectives, the more doors and perspectives you open to build your own identity. And that's why I think like it's so, translation is probably one of the most multifaceted things we can come in contact with, because it's just so many clashings of the way people before us have created this language to reflect their identities, and also how we interpret it and how we relate it to ourselves. And that's just really, really inspiring.
Yeah, and that's not ultimate. I'm so trained to say ultimately, I feel like, from emphasizing things in my class. I'm just like, don't forget ultimately there's... So everything you're talking about is like how we grow and how we form like relationships. And that's why I didn't stop writing. And that's why I started writing, I think.
Yeah, it's how we develop our understanding of the world through so many different layers as we kind of grow up, which is really beautiful.
So powerful. And especially in relation to literature, I'm reading like one of my favorite books is The Stranger by Albert Camus, and I'm reading it in French for the first time after having like studied French for long enough to actually be able to like understand. And it's just like both of you referenced, there's so much nuance that language gives to our lives, and providing these new frames of reference, these new ways of understanding states of being, of understanding time, understanding gender, and how we exist in the world and are seen in the world. Language just gives us, knowing different languages and intimately understanding the world in those different languages, gives us so many new ways to understand ourselves and the environment around us. And that is incredibly powerful. And kind of on that note, we were wondering if you had just any advice for aspiring young writers or translators, or just advice to anyone who wants to step into the world of translation.
Well, I would say find some really talented young writers to work with that will really inspire you. I don't necessarily just mean young writers, but I mean, I think writing is one of the natural complements to it is like intergenerational experiences. So when I was a grad student, I got to volunteer and teach very young students writing. I met older individuals at a prison outside of Coralville. And a lot of my peers in grad school were like around my age. And so having different experiences across time with dead people too, with dead authors, even older. Like, I just think everyone should explore writing or translating as how they interact with genre in their writing, how they engage questions of identity. There's a lot that, like you were saying, it can make us aware of. And sometimes these are very practical handheld solutions that another language has, either in terms of efficiency or in terms of joy and playfulness. I guess I'm speaking to an English audience, but maybe not specifically, but to an English audience, I would say keep borrowing different kinds of language as well. I guess that's the other thing that I always like to tell students. Play with words, lengthen them, contract them. Part of the fun of German is that you get to all these compound words create metaphors in a single word, which is then hard to unravel, or, you know, maybe not hard, but a gift to unravel. And so sometimes, yeah, we're learning about ourselves maybe in reflection, but oftentimes too, I'm learning and I'm just borrowing or appropriating in some way. And part of why I feel like this German text landed in my lap for a good reason is because when I had the inkling that I wanted to translate, it was very hard to think, well, where do I find a text that, you know, the issues of appropriation in language are going to be appropriate, I guess. Because I didn't study I didn't study any German literature, really.
So cool. So cool. And it just, I keep on thinking like we need to wrap, but it does remind me too of just like when I've studied like Korean and how you can like drop the subject and drop it, and the verb is the point of emphasis, or the way that you can like add these little like grammar points to the end of the verb, and then that's what changes the thing instead of having to like conjugate things to fit the subject. And especially in poetry and in areas of literature where we have such artistic freedom, it helps me just frame my work, I guess, in new ways, and frame action and subject and how those relate. And it also makes me, have you seen like the Google Translate challenges, like where people try to translate things in like a bunch of different languages? It almost makes me want to try that with like something I've written and like translate it into different languages that I don't see how different the final product could be if you bring it back into its original language. That's really cool. And just that playfulness of language, I think, is something we don't emphasize enough, especially in like language classes, because language learning is so, so fun and cool. And I feel like especially in American schools, we don't emphasize enough how much it's not just here to benefit you in your career and communicating with more people, but it's a way for you to see the world in a new way and see your own language in a new way. And that playfulness is so beautiful. And I'm so glad that you emphasize that to your students. That's and also, of course, BTL, Between the Lines, is a great way to start down your path of translation and comparative literature and all these super cool things. But yeah, those were all our questions for you. Thank you so, so, so much for all your insights and your incredible, everything you do is amazing. And we're just so grateful to have shared a bit of time with you today. And yeah, Astrolit is grateful for people like you. And we hope that you can inspire many generations of translators to come in and out of the Astrolit community. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much for inviting me and having such wonderful, thoughtful questions and having such wonderful experiences at BTL that just continue to radiate outward. I'm trying to bring a BTL expansion program to Philly, hopefully with the school district and maybe the free library. Those students who can't necessarily travel, we'll come to them in Philly.
Oh, that's awesome. Oh, keep us updated on that. I know.
I'll let you know.
Oh,
yeah.
My gosh. Yeah. Thank you so much again.
Thank you.
Hey Asterix, thank you so much for listening with us as we discuss with Sean Giroux about translation and poetry and finding identity in different cultures and words and barriers. It's always a fun time here. Astrolit's spring submissions close May 15th and the theme is paradox. Feel free to explore any language paradoxes, identity paradoxes, science and math and your understanding of the world. We're so lucky to read all of your beautiful submissions. Between the Lines, the program where we all met, is now taking applications for the summer. Follow us on our Instagram at aster.lit and our Twitter, lit.aster, to keep up and see our new information. As this month is Poetry Month, we'll be looking forward to a poetry live stream where we can write together and perhaps do an open mic at the end. Once again, thank you so much, and we're excited to see you and next month's episode. Thank you.